program is Memories of the Past, and our regular guest on the program is John Minskelvin. Good afternoon, John.
Hello, Doug. How are you?
Good. And I'm glad you're here.
I'm glad I'm here, too.
We kept missing up on the dates there.
Yeah, kept missing up on the date. I had it set there.
And then I'd forget the last...
Yeah, got busy, and, well, you know, after all, we got a business to run.
I know.
It's a sideline. This is fun.
It's a busy world, isn't it?
Yep.
Well, we were just before we were going in, and all the things that have been happening in Grand Haven. Our topics, of course, are always about the past, but big things have been happening in Grand Haven with the new police fire building expansion of the hospital.
Yeah.
That causes you to reminisce, doesn't it?
That's
John?
Right. Let's go far in our topic of today, and let's some of the things. Well, they've been happening. We're 35, 40 years, but that isn't far compared to what we have been talking about. But I've been thinking this noon at Kiwanis, Don Andrews had some and maps and architects' drawings of the addition that they've been putting onto it. What is it, 3, 4, 5 years ago? That they added quite a piece to the hospital, and already it's too small, and they're putting on an addition, two additions, as a matter of fact, and they're planning on a third one.
Mm-hmm.
Our town is growing. Our area is growing. And that brought me back to the last Saturday's dedication of the police and fire station building, and that which is a marvelous building, costing somewhere around $1 million or better, and quite an improvement, as a matter of fact, a vast improvement over the old, let's call it the old fire station and police station. It's not old, it's only was built in 1934. And that brought me to thinking back to when that whole square where the city hall is was the Akeley College. There was not the whole square, but the Washington Street and part of the Columbus Street side of it was Akeley College.
Is that the girls' school?
That was the girls' school. It runs by the Episcopal Church. And was quite a school, and times have changed. And believe me, when you look back over these few years, and I say few, going back to probably 1940, 35, which is in my young life a few,
sure,
few years, and the changes that have taken place, and the improvements, let's go back and look at the square where the city hall and the fire station are now located. As I said, that was Akeley College, Akeley Hall. They no longer plan to keep it running. This was a little bit before the Depression, or maybe the Depression started about in 1928, didn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Well, this is about that time. And the diocese of the Episcopal Church decided to discontinue Akeley Hall, and they offered that to the city, that location, the lots. And the city at that time didn't figure that they needed it. They wanted it. So they offered it, and the telephone company came along and bought the corner where the telephone building is. They bought that for $100 a foot. 66 feet they bought for $6,600.
Is that right?
Mm-hmm. We sold it to the Michigan Bell Telephone Company. And $6,600 back in those days, we thought we had quite a sale.
Sure.
And it was in those days. Today, that's nothing. Buy an ordinary building lot costs you that much. But anyway, when the telephone company built their building, then the city began to realize that maybe they did need it, and so they got busy and bought the rest of it. Now, when Akeley College was there, there was a big building, sitting back in the lot, and the dormitory, which was on Columbus Street, where the old, we'll call it the old police and fire station was. And east of Akeley College was a home, and I think they call that the Shippey home. I may be wrong on that, but I think it was a Shippey home. It was a nice home. It had a picket fence around. I remember a white picket fence, and the kids used to go along with a stick and play tic-tac on that fence. You know, a kid would walk along there and go...
Yeah, and then it scratches it.
Yeah. And east of that was a Congregational church. And behind the Congregational church, on a lot that you could hardly build a chicken coop on today and be within the zoning law ordinance, was the parsonage of the Congregational church. And then there was a house next to that. Jake Heafy had a house next to that, a nice big square house. And then on the corner was we call it the Norcross house, and going back further than Norcross, it was the Cook home. And east of that on Columbus Street was the Iowa Dornbus home, and then Akeley Hall. The city decided that they did want that building and Akeley, that property, and Akeley Hall was torn down, and the city hall was built about in 1933 with WPA funds. And, of course, the church had been torn down. Congregational church had discontinued and was torn down. So we got the city hall built there, and there was a vacant lot on the corner where the Congregational church was. They torn the church down and the parsonage behind it, so it left, about 132-foot lot, mm-hmm. 66 by 132. Perhaps the Shippey home would have been included in that, which would have brought it a little further east, but it would have brought it pretty close to where the city hall is, right up to the lot line. But anyway, the hospital at that time was on 5th Street in the old Loudon House, which is now the educational unit of the Presbyterian Church.
Oh, yes.
And they were getting ready to build a new hospital. They had chosen the lot where the hospital is now, or the block, let's say, the entire block. And there was a cemetery out there, which was a cemetery of the Pest House. In years back, the Pest House was there. I don't think that I can quite remember the actual Pest House, but I remember...
What is Pest House?
Well, anybody that had smallpox or diphtheria or anything like that, they sent them out there.
Well,
because
what did
that
pest
was
mean?
pestilous disease.
I see.
A contagious disease.
So you had to go out there.
I don't know what kind of a hospital. There must have been some special care for those kind of people. And if they passed away, they buried them right away.
They didn't
wait till the next day or anything else. If it was at night, they buried them right away. That's the difference
a difference in so many things.
The way they took care of communicable diseases,
yeah.
And the way they do it now. Of course, today they have drugs that take care of that, but in those days, get the body buried right away so that it couldn't communicate to anybody else. There was no funeral or showing the body or anything else. They just buried them. Probably had a service of some sort, a graveside service. But anyway, there was that lot, and the baseball diamond was out there where the hospital is now.
Mm-hmm.
And this Pest House was on the corner of Taylor and Sheldon, and they didn't want to disturb that cemetery. And so there was some agitation that was no place. And it was a heck of a ways out in the country then.
Yeah.
Back in 33, because there wasn't anything much out there. We have pictures in our office of Sheldon Road in 1926, and it's vacant land.
Really?
Purely vacant land. Well, anyway, they had torn the Presbyterian Church, or Episcopal Church, down, and so people said that is the place for the hospital. Now let's just look at that. And there was a lot of, well, there was name calling and.
Was there really? It got to be a real controversial thing.
Yeah, articles in the paper, public pulse articles, and everything else, and that was the place. Think of it, putting the hospital way out there, out on Sheldon Road, where if you had a relative in there, how would you get out there to the hospital? Way out there,
That was the big argument.
That was a big argument. Well, if it was up on the corner of 5th and Washington Street, why, you could walk there. Anybody could walk to see their family. Now, let's look back. What in Sam Hill would have happened had they built the hospital on that ground?
That'd have been a mess, huh? John. That'd have been a mess.
Well, nobody, Doug, nobody ever expected the town to grow or the hospital to grow like it is now, because if they had built it there on that corner, it would have had to been a 2 or 3-story building. And if
what would you have done about parking? Parking alone.
Well, that's right. They'd probably had to build it 10 stories in order to take care of half of what they're taking care of now. But anyway, the location out there where the hospital is now one. Now, I think that this, if I'm not mistaken, was about in 1920. No, it had been later than that. When they built the hospital out there, I think it was about 1938. And, but I couldn't help but think. Of course, they got the city hall built there, and the city hall has probably been adequate. They're using every inch of space in it today, and they'll probably be using part of the old fire station for some of the departments in the city hall when they get going. But now they've built the fire station on the corner where they would have wanted to build a hospital. Where would they have built the fire station? Of course, that isn't so terrible. They could have found a place around where they could have built the fire station. But
Have been a good location for
it.
That
would
hospital.
Not have been.
Would it have at that time? Was there even enough room then?
Well, barely.
I was going to say, it must have been marginal then.
Yes,
even.
It would have been marginal then. But it was a nice location.
Yeah,
and
well,
if
sure,
we'd
it's handy.
If we'd have built a hospital, a small hospital, and it stayed small, it would have been kind of a handy spot for it. But the town has grown, the community has grown, the district around us, and we've taken in, of course, with the hospital, we've taken the community. But just look at, of course, hindsight's always better than foresight, and we can look back at it and see what would have happened. But I wonder how many people remember this and have thought of it. But while I was sitting there at the dedication of the fire station Saturday afternoon, this thing came to my mind, and I said to myself, George, just look at what has happened, and look what would have happened had they built the hospital there, and they would have had no place for the expansion of the city buildings at all. It was even a mistake that the city didn't buy the thing to begin with, and they would have had the telephone corner.
That's right.
And
that's
at that time, when the telephone company built that, their office was upstairs over Steiner's drugstore.
Is that right?
And that's all there was to the telephone office. And, I remember when the telephone company had a horse and wagon and one serviceman. So,
boy,
just think of what's happened.
Yeah.
So in my lifetime, I have seen considerable changes, and when I look back at it and see all that's happened and see the wise decisions that were made and the Well, it's a good thing that the citizens were far-sighted enough and are still are to have seen and to see now what it needs to be done. And the hospital, the plans that Don Andrews had there, he gave a most interesting program at Kiwanis, this new one. And I'll tell you, that hospital, it is something right now, but it's going to really be something when it
certainly
when
is.
It goes.
You know, the stuff that you're saying, John, really is good for us to hear of all ages. It tells us one thing, that we should really be open-minded about long-range planning.
That's right.
And not think of just for today.
That's right.
And that's for people of all ages.
That's
because
right.
I suppose there were young and old alike getting involved there.
Sure.
I mean,
sure. And some of our finest citizens.
Sure.
And sincere.
Yep. Oh,
they were sincere.
Oh, I don't think anyone questions that.
They were sincere. They believed. They believed what they said. They believed that that was the spot for it.
But foresight sometimes is so difficult to comprehend.
Yeah.
And sometimes it is not even unwise to listen to other people or outside planners to just give you some ideas
That's
of what
right.
happens in communities.
That's right.
And our own history, as you're proving right this minute, is good advice for us on how to react and
That's
how to
right.
think in the future.
That's right. Going back in my own life, I was, at the time that all of this happened, I was active in the real estate and insurance business and was interested in the town. As a matter of fact, I don't think anybody's been any more interested in it than I have. I often say that people can follow, I'm going to boast a little bit.
That's all right.
Follow my career, my doings, my sales and my work, and I have never made a sale or a deal that I have been sorry about or ashamed of.
Mm-hmm.
Everything that we've done has been for the good of somebody.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, I ate while I was doing it. so it was. But I mean, as I say, I'm boasting a little bit. I didn't mean to get into this, but everything that I have done, I've done with the interest of someone else at heart.
Mm-hmm.
Tried to be generous and give my best advice to people and help them in their decisions.
Mm-hmm.
And, yes, I was active in all of the civic stuff, the programs. I was interested in where they built the hospital.
Was the council split on that issue, too? Do you remember, John?
Well, I couldn't tell you that. And the I remember the council was split on the building, on tearing down the Akeley Hall dormitory. They wanted to make a fire station out of the old dormitory.
Oh, really?
Yes. So there's been decisions that way that have been good. There was some merit, they thought, at that time to making that old Akeley Hall into a fire station, police station, but look at that's only 40 years ago, and by George, it's too small already.
Yeah,
and they look at this new building. Did you go through the
yes.
new police
yeah.
and fire station?
Yeah.
Huh?
Yes.
You think it's too big?
No, I really don't.
No, but it looks too big today.
It sure does.
There's a lot of space in
but
there.
But when you stop to think, you know, where we've gone, and
well, when we get this aerial ladder, which our city needs,
that's right,
and we'll get. There's some more good thinking on the part of our fire department and council and the powers that be.
Sure.
They're going to have room to put it when they
sure.
got the when they got the rescue squad car or
rescue truck.
Truck. They had to squeeze that in somewhere, and all of those things are for the good of the community.
That's right.
And I tell you, this is some town.
Yep.
And I'm proud of it, and the more I see of it, the more proud I am of it. Yep. and of all of the people who run it.
Couldn't agree with you more, John, and I'm a newcomer, you know, relatively
speaking. Well, I knew that you would be interested in it because you're just boy.
Yeah, and I've only been here 12 years, too.
Is it 12 years?
Yeah.
Well, these are all things that haven't happened too long ago.
Yeah.
Our program has been, we've been talking about things that happened in the 1890s and early 1900s, but I got to thinking that, as I say, Saturday, while I was sitting there and went through this fire station, I said to myself, what in the world would have happened had they done what some other people wanted to do?
Well-meaning people.
And as I say, foresight is a lot different than hindsight.
John, you were talking about that old phone company. Do you remember when the first phones came?
No, not the first ones. I remember who had the first telephones. I remember the numbers of the first four or five telephones.
Yeah.
But
I mean, that's all that were in town for a while?
For a while, yeah. Dornbus Fishhouse was number one. Robbins was number two. Dr. Reynolds was number three. Number four, I don't remember. Five was either the Grand Trunk or the Pier Marquette, and six was the, well, one of the other. I may have those.
You just had one number?
Yeah.
That's all you had was one number?
That's right. Our number, James W. Oaks and Company number, was number 7W.
Is that right?
Yeah.
What did W mean?
That was two rings.
Oh.
That was the house. They had a phone in the house and one in the office. When it rang in the office, it rang at home, too, so that if somebody called the office and there was nobody there, the boss could answer it at home.
Oh.
And also, if they were talking from at home, you couldn't use the phone in the office.
Yeah, but the boss didn't want his wife talking on the phone too much then, did he?
Yeah. No, well, I remember more than once the boss is saying, mate, get off that phone, we need it. And number eight was Eagle, Ottawa. Nine, I don't know who's nine, but there were, I remember, of course, the first, they had the first telephone here, I think, was a citizen's phone, and the office for that was over in the building where Paul Hoster, where Hoster's news agency is now.
What do you mean, a citizen's phone?
Well, that was a citizen's telephone company. It was a little local.
Locally owned?
Yeah. And then then the Bell Telephone Company took that over, Michigan Bell.
Well, then you didn't have to dial. You just asked for
couldn't dial. You rang a bell, you cranked it on the side, and when you got central, you did like Fibber McGee. Hello, Mert, get me number nine, or whatever it was.
Was that a lady local who ran?
Yeah.
Who was the switchboard operator?
Yeah. Oh, sure.
Did you know her?
Sure. Yeah. I used to know a lot of the telephone girls, even after they got up here, I recognized their voice. And that's the time that Fibber McGee was on, and he always said Mert, and it was one of the telephone girls I always called Mert.
Is that right?
And, I've forgotten her first name, but Freeze, her name.
Well, didn't you see somebody a while back in recent months or years that used to be a phone operator here?
I met her over in the drugstore.
Was that the same one?
That's the one. She came up to me. She was with her sister-in-law. She came up to me and she said, John Van Skelvin. And I looked at her and I says, well, for a second I was stymied. And I says, Mert. I walked up, gave her a big kiss. She was a girl I knew very well. Yeah, well, sure.
Grand Haven didn't switch over to dial that many years ago.
Oh, no.
When I worked in Holland, Margie DeHeer, was a news correspondent here then for us, you know.
That.
And I remember that it was four numbers. I used to have to call by four numbers. And then I think Spring Lake had some dials. It was V.
No, something. Spring Lake didn't get their dial till we got ours.
Didn't they?
It all came at once, It was all. It got so that you didn't have to crank it.
Oh, yeah.
Left the receiver and
then a lady would be there.
Say number, please. And you give her the number and then you get it. But I used to kid Fran Freeze. I'd say, "Well, hi, Mert. How are you?"
And they were above Steiner's then.
Yeah, Well, then, of course, when they moved up here, the telephone, that was about in, about 1930, 29 or 30, that they moved up there on Washington.
Well, how did the fire departments get their alarms before that, John?
Mostly with the fireboxes.
Were there fireboxes in before there were phones?
Yes. Well, no, I wouldn't say that.
Oh.
There were some phones, but not so many. They had telephones, but everybody didn't have a phone. If you wanted to call up somebody, you went next door and asked Mrs. Smith if you could use her telephone, or went over to the grocery store and used that one, because there weren't too many of them.
Were they difficult to keep operating? I mean, did you have a lot of trouble with them?
No.
Like that?
No, they had pretty good service on them. They had pretty good service.
Mm-hmm.
They were, I remember, battery operated, those old phones that were fastened on the wall, you know.
Yeah.
Sort of a desk, and the speaker stuck out on a movable limb. They had batteries in them. And the telephone company men used to kept their horse down at my granddad's barn, and they'd come back to the barn with the back end of that wagon full of batteries.
What kind of batteries? You mean flashlight batteries?
No, the regular dry cells.
Oh.
Stand about 6 inches high and 3 inches across, 2.5 inches. We used to, Bob Radke and I used to take those batteries. They were no good. They were dead, see. And they were ready to be thrown away. And Bob Radke and I used to take them and hook them up, 10, 15, 20 of them, and see if we could get a spark out of them. We wanted to run a little electric engine, but there was no juice in
it. Not even a
little
spark.
We monkeyed with those things. It took the patience of Job to wire them up and everything, but they weren't any good. They took them down there and they burned them.
Burned them?
Yeah, there was carbon in them. And that, talking about carbon, that makes me think of the old street lights around Grand Haven. Getting back there, here we got the Board of Light and Power.
Yeah.
Look what we got. I can remember when the whole darn line crew of the Light and Power Company was Bill Strang and Case Wasis.
Is that right?
And they had a two-wheel cart made with wagon wheels and a little box on the side of it, and says Case and Bill. Case Wasis and Bill Strang. That was, and they pushed that around town with all their equipment on it, and ladder and whatever they had, and their climbers and belt, safety belt, and so on and so forth. And then they would go to each corner and let the street light down and trim the carbon in that light. Pick that carbon up. There was a stick about the size of this pen of black carbon, and you could draw on the sidewalk with it.
Mm-hmm.
And the kids used to play hopscotch.
Sure.
And we made the diagram on the sidewalk to play hopscotch.
John, I'd like to talk some more about that on our next program.
Okay.
Our time is over.
You mean this one's gone?
This one's gone.
Okay.
But next time I'd like to do that some more.
Okay.
Thanks for coming up this afternoon.
You're welcome. It's a lot of fun.
This has been Memories of the Past, and been brought to you by the Vincent Wick Funeral Home of Grand Haven.